I'm not afraid of death. Not if it's for something, you know, a war, something like that, a reason. But Jackie, to see this strong, beautiful man just wither away to nothing. And you can't do nothing about it. And you can't fight it.
You envy the Hasids and their beliefs?
All the shit's for nothing. And if all the shit's for nothing, why do I gotta think about it?
That's the mystery, isn't it? The mystery of God or whatever you want to call it. Why we're given the questionable gift of knowing that we're going to die.
Oh, wow. What a way to bring in a discussion. That's right. We know we're going to die. Welcome to Cut to Black, a Sopranos sit down. I am Jim Scampoli, and we're here to discuss season one, episode three.
I'm Jacob Burrows. And yes, we are indeed here to discuss denial, anger, acceptance, episode three of The Sopranos. And I just got struck by a thought that I'll share before I lose it, which was these clips we play at the beginning, they're often from the therapy sessions, which is natural because there's so many great lines in there. But it also made me think, like, wow, they really managed to make a monologue make so much sense. Like, because in Shakespeare and whatever, where they turn to the crowd and they just go on and on, that's basically what Tony Soprano is doing, but it doesn't feel ridiculous. And he can talk about fucking death and all these things, and it just makes so much sense. But it's such a brilliant thing.
Yes, absolutely. Because we can have our... We get to see Tony in his element, you know? He has to be the father, husband figure in his... When his family, and then of course in his other family, he has to be the tough mob capo. But then when we see him in a little bit more vulnerable state, he can talk about, he can say he's not afraid of death, but we know that he's absolutely terrified to die.
Yeah, absolutely. He knows more than anyone in the world. And yeah, I mean, it really feels pretty Shakespearean where it's like, you know, Hamlet or whatever is like a big, powerful person, and then he turns to the crowd and shares these things, and you get so invested in a character like that because you become close to them, you understand them like no one in the world does. That's what we're given, like a privileged insight into his brain and all the things going on. Because if you cut out all the therapy, I mean, it would be fun to watch him, but it wouldn't be like, this is our friend Tony. Like this, I get why people would like, I want to die in a war too, Tony, now because you said it. Like there's such a deep connection there.
Yes, yes. And I mean, we're only three episodes in here on the third season. Things are starting to open up a bit.
Or the first season, even.
Say that again?
The first season? You said the third season?
Did I? I thought it. Okay. Yep. Let me correct myself. The third episode in the first season, things are starting to open up a bit. We're starting to learn about some of these other characters and kind of the world that Tony's in. You know, we're visiting Satriales a bunch. I know you don't know what that is yet, but you've been there. You've been to Satriales. It's basically the deli. And of course, we're seeing Tony in therapy. And maybe we'll get to see a little bit more mob stuff, huh? Maybe in this third episode. What do we start out with?
Well, we start out with, because we said it at the end of the last one, like, why do they think this truck stuff is over? It's clearly not over. You've really gone and messed up. And Christopher and his buddy, they seem to, like, they leave the truck. And then, like, they're like, what? Well, we got to jerk you off too? Like, what? We didn't do enough for you? Like, you killed one of our people. And, like, that's even said in the first scene when they return the truck. They're like, call the cops. Those are the guys that killed our friend. And consequences do indeed come up. But first of all, we get the truck returned. And Jackie and his guy, who I don't know the name of. No, not Jackie. Sorry. Junior and his guy, they're discussing options. And I like that we get to see Junior think a bit, because he's been kind of like, he's an antagonist to our main character, but he's so far been mostly like just a grumpy old man and like really angry about stuff and not having a lot of cunning or anything like that. and it doesn't take a lot, but having his second in command go be all gung ho about, oh, we should have done this, we shouldn't do not fuck with us, blah blah blah. And he's like, take it easy, we're not making a Western here.
Yeah,
and I like that so much.
That's a great line, and you're right, because we've only seen Junior kind of either complaining about Tony or even in Tony's face kind of giving him shit. And now we see like he's not an idiot. You know, he definitely has an axe to grind with Tony, maybe some bitterness about being passed over, but he's not just going to go in guns blazing like Mikey Palmisi, who's the second in command. Like, yeah, he's like, we should have nipped this thing in the bud immediately with this Christopher Moltisanti situation. And Junior's like, settle down. Well, plus that, from what we know about Junior as well, he has to kind of do his subtle check-ins with Olivia Soprano to see what her thoughts might be on the situation as well.
Yeah, which I'm interested in because I'm not like we can get into that when we get to that scene, but I'm not sure what like why he's doing that yet. But yeah, he doesn't want to do anything too rash because I mean that's kind of his argument. These people on the other side are rash and do stupid stuff like whatever is easy, and he wants to do a bit of thinking first. And also, I don't think he like he's really annoyed, but I don't think he wants to kill Tony. Like he says like fucking family, man. Like he wants Tony to feel like Tony's on the outside and he's the one that everyone cares about. He doesn't want him like fucking in a ditch somewhere. At least that's my read on it right now.
Yes, and I love how it still does come down to like we even see a little bit from Junior that this kind of still isn't a big deal, even though one of the drivers was killed.
Yeah.
It's still he's mostly mad that, you know, the trucking company said, tell Tony thank you. And he's
Yeah.
like, tell Tony thank you. Like, I'm the one that's behind the scenes fixing everything here. What are you talking about? These are Tony's guys that are messing with our routes and killed one of our drivers.
Yes. But moving on to our favorite person, Tony, he is waiting to go into therapy and he sees a painting and he takes a bit of a closer look on at it. And going in, he asks, is that a trick painting out there? The barn with the old tree all rotted out inside? And he says that it doesn't scare him, all the scary stuff that they put into the picture, but they definitely put that right in there. That's a trick picture, he says.
Yeah,
And
it's one of
then,
those Rorschach tests.
yeah,
What
yeah.
do you call it? Rorschach tests.
Which I, you know, I, maybe we should name a new segment or whatever, but when we get a cultural reference that's so beyond me, at least, I mean, I know what a Rorschach test is, but do you know what the other part of that was?
Well, Rorschach's from like a sitcom. Oh, Welcome Back, Cotter. Like
Yeah.
the old, and it's not that I've really ever, because that's even like before my time. But like John Travolta was on it. So it's like a kind of a known, yeah, nice cultural reference for you.
Yeah, and for me, that's like, okay, so this is what people feel like watching Buffy, when they're like 10 years older or 20 years older than me, or no, younger or whatever. And this reference to all these, yeah, if you make a reference to a 70s thing, I'm like, okay, great. But yeah, then they glide into talking about Jackie being in the hospital, and he doesn't even want to say it's cancer at first. That kind of comes out, and he's like, oh, your friend has cancer. So this is the overarching type of thematic thing with the painting in this episode and him seeing death everywhere.
And we are seeing, I mean, it's on the nose, but we're seeing the denial segment of Tony here, from the title. What is it? Denial, anger, and acceptance. So yeah, we're seeing his denial. And I do like how it plays out where he doesn't, like you said, he doesn't say the cancer. It just kind of, he kind of accidentally says it. Like he doesn't want
He
to.
says he's gonna like he's gonna scare that cancer right off, and she's like, he has cancer, and that's
Yeah.
the end of the scene. Which yeah, gets us to the hospital where all the crew's coming by. Like first he's sitting with this, what is his name?
Mikey.
Junior's Mikey. He's sitting with Mikey, who's telling him about all these people who have cancer and
What
how
he's talking
about
about
it.
the air bubbles and how
Yeah.
he's like, you ever think you might get air bubbles? I think that can kill you. And it's just, yeah, it's very scary things. And yeah, he's bringing up cancer and.
Yes, but then the whole crew comes in and they're sort of palling around, everything acting like everything's normal, more or less. And Silvio remembers a motel owner he knows who wants help. with his son-in-law.
Yes, with getting a get, which is, I guess, like a Jewish divorce, like a, is it an I know an annulment. I believe that's like a Christian church. Well,
I was surprised with my limited knowledge. I was surprised that Hasidic Jewish people even can get a divorce, because, you know, so do Catholics do that? Yeah, I guess they do, but I don't know none of that. And apparently, yeah, the get, he has to, I feel like I'm in dangerous territory because I know so little about it. I don't know.
Yeah, well, I mean, looking up real quick, it's you know, a divorce document in Jewish religious law. It must be presented by a husband to his wife. So, I mean, yeah, that's what we kind of know from this episode, right, to effectuate their divorce. So yeah, that's why, of course, this guy's not giving it up, because he feels like he's owed something for it, for all his work he's put in being, you know, the caring husband and taking care of his wife, and not only that, taking care of the family business. And Hesh, that's kind of the Jewish guy that's in the crew, like Tony's friend, that older guy, Hesh.
Yeah.
He's like he's kind of telling them, no, you don't want to get involved with these people. He understands what's going to happen, and like the stubbornness and the way Jews are. So he's like, you don't want involved in this. And Tony and the rest of the mom gang is like, what's the problem? We just, you know, rough a guy up a little bit. We're going to get a piece of this hotel.
Yeah. And I mean, there's some other stuff in between, but let's mention the meeting as well that happens later. Let's jump to that for a moment, when they have the meeting with the father and his real son, I guess, about the son-in-law. And he says that Ariel, which is the name of the son-in-law, is hurting his daughter, which I think is interesting, that in all the like roughing up of Ariel that's later, and he's like defending himself, no one brings up the claim that he's been hurting his wife. That's not really mentioned again.
Oh yeah, like I completely forgot about that, because yeah, it's almost pitched where I kind of believe Ariel, where he is. I mean, he's probably a piece of shit. Like, you could tell he's probably an asshole, but I believe that he was just putting up with the father and just being like a schlubby husband, and now they just want to get him out of the business. But of course, you know, hey, he put in his blood and sweat into this business.
I mean, yeah, just from looking at this episode and how the father later treats Tony Soprano, like, yeah, if once you've served your purpose and if you're not useful anymore, let's get rid of you. Yeah. And yeah, that's why I brought it up, because I wasn't sure if that was like them just disregarding it, or if that was something we believe happened for real, or if it didn't matter, or if they didn't bring it up because it wouldn't make a difference. Hey, what if you punch your lady? That's not a big deal, or is it? I don't know, because they're just talking about economy when they're messing him up later.
Yes, yeah, it's all about the business and who's going to get what, who's going to get a piece of it.
And this also, I mean, that whole storyline is, I know their names now, Paulie and Silvio. They're going on another side quest, and I'm starting to see a pattern here by this episode, where something gets brought up and Tony's like doesn't want to deal with it, and he's like, make it happen, and then they're off beating someone up in their side quest. Like, that's been the format here, and I don't have a problem with that.
Yeah, for sure. So, yeah, I mean, well, go ahead.
No, I was going to move back a bit. Did you have anything more on this?
Well, yeah, no, I was going to move back a bit as well, like back to when they're in the hospital. And yes, everyone's kind of got these polite pleasantries, because that's how you want to be. You know, if someone you love's in the hospital, you want to have, you know, a nice positive outlook. And it still seems like not a real thing, because Jackie, you know, he still seems like Jackie. He's just in a hospital bed. But I do like his comment after Mikey leaves, and he's like, it's like the Grim Reaper with this fucking guy. Everyone's got cancer and sickness.
Yeah.
And, you know, we do see, like, we see Jackie's wife there as well. You know, everyone's just kind of putting on the standard show. It's just important because, as we see just through the length of this episode, we start to see Jackie's like health and just the way he looks start to diminish. And you see, like, just how death creeps up on you, and it's frightening.
Yeah.
We understand why Tony would be frightened of death.
Yeah, I mean, he at the start, or I don't remember which of the conversations with Melfi, but he says like he's bragging about the fact that he's still got all the hair on his head, even though he's had so much chemo and everything.
And he's got a great head of hair. Like that's like the way he kind of, he's
Yeah.
like, and, but he, even by his own words, he's like, he's been having chemo for 3 weeks. So it's like not even, it's not, it's we're at the beginning of this, long fought battle. And he's thinking, oh, he's got, it's been 3 weeks and he still has every hair on his head. And he's got a beautiful head of hair.
Yeah. And I do like how we come into this in general. Like it feels kind of, or the show in general at this point feels very in media res, where we're like they don't explain everything to you immediately. Because in the first episode I thought Tony was the head of all the mob organization, and then in the second episode we see someone and we find out he's got some health issues. And then in this episode, the relationship comes into such more like crystal clear focus, and it's like piece by piece broadening the world for me, who hasn't watched any of it before. For example, him throwing Brendan out in Satyateli or whatever the fuck it's called, the deli.
Is.
Yeah, throwing him into the pig on a table. Like for me, that was just like, oh yeah, that guy's so annoying. But now it's like, oh no, he actually does care a lot about Jackie, obviously, and all this stuff's going on in the background, and this is like the episode we focus in on it.
Correct. Yeah. It is. It is an interesting way they do it. Because the show does have respect for you, the audience, to kind of pick up what's happening and go along with it. Because yeah, like most shows, I mean, especially around this time, it would have been like in the first episode, they would have cut to like an FBI agent being like, here's the New Jersey crime families. We got Jackie Aprile at the top, and then we got Junior Soprano and Tony. So and it would like kind of go that way.
Yep.
And not to say that maybe this show doesn't delve into some of that, but for the beginning, they just kind of go with it and let you pick it up, and just kind of go through the character beats.
Yes.
So, yeah,
Which is really nice. They don't need to do like all the world building stuff immediately, and like we don't need to have that chart in our heads from the start. We need to get to know the characters, which they're doing really well. It's a very short scene at the choir rehearsal for that his kid Meadow has, and they're all complaining. We're just finding out here that they're studying for the SATs at the same time and everything, and they're very stressed, which will lead to stuff later. And
Well,
moving on, yep.
real quick, I just love how the stupid choir teacher, she has the line where she's like, I can't believe they would schedule the SATs the same day as our recital, or like the same weekend, but then she finds out it's the same day.
Yeah.
But she's dumb enough to even kind of reinforce in their minds that the SATs are kind of being unfair or something, like it's some weird plan. And because even she's putting the recital above it in a weird
Yeah,
way. It's
of
such a
course.
small detail, but rewatching it, I was like, oh man, what an idiot. It's like, I was so annoyed by that teacher for just that short scene.
So, hey, Jim, what are SATs as well? Is
Oh
what are
shit.
those?
Yeah, from watching American television, you have not seen, well,
No,
SAT.
I've seen hella of them, but I don't know what it I, is that for getting into college or what?
Pretty much, yes. The
Okay.
SATs, you take them in your like your junior or senior year. It's a standardized test, and like it's one of the big driving forces when you apply to college, because it's like an aptitude test. And I believe it's what broken down between like English and, because usually you'll have two scores and then they adds up. And like it used to be a 1600, I believe, was a perfect score. But now I've heard them talk about SAT scores in shows, like more current shows, and they're talking about like 2400s or whatever.
And
But
you're
yeah,
like, wow, these kids are geniuses.
yeah, there's like mathematics, writing and language reading. It's just a basic thing, and it is a stressful thing when you're in high school. And if you watch a lot of high school American shows, there's always going to be that episode about like the SATs and studying, or taking like a pre-SAT test. Or if you watch Saved by the Bell, Zach Morris got a perfect score.
Oh yeah, well, I was also gonna say you can start taking caffeine pills to try to catch up, right? I've learned a lot from you, Americans. Well, or crystal meth if you're on this show.
Scholastic assessment test.
Right. And but it all adds up to one score. I was going to say we have something similar, but on the other hand, I think it's all kept like separate into the different subjects. Getting one score for all those different subjects seems very stressful to me.
Well, it looks like it still is broken down because, yeah, this show in here, when I'm reading up on it, shows 1600. That was always my understanding as a perfect score. But I've just seen other shows where it seemed like there was higher because it's like 800 points are for like writing and language or like reading comprehension, then 800 for mathematics.
Okay.
But yeah, enough of that shit.
Yeah, enough of that shit. I mean, the only important part of why I was trying to figure that out was I wanted to find out like when this is taking place. Is it always at a certain time of the year? And is it in your senior year? Does that tell me how old Meadow is? Because I don't remember. Is she going to college next year? Is it the spring?
From my understanding, you could usually take them twice, and you could take them junior year, and then you could take them again senior year if you want to try to improve your score.
Okay.
So I believe she's a junior, but I could be wrong. Maybe she started the senior year. I forget where we're at as far, but we'll figure it out. We'll find out in this journey.
Yeah, all the more reason to do some amphetamines just to get you up to the task if you can do it again the next year.
Which
but
is
anyway.
So weird, not to stay on this for too long. It's yeah. Funny that they go immediately to like crystal meth in this episode, because around this time was when people started getting prescribed like Ritalin and Adderall. Mm-hmm. But I guess it wasn't as big in the, you know, I guess the pop culture or the zeitgeist yet, because nowadays you'd have this storyline, but you wouldn't get something as scary as crystal meth. You just get some Adderall, because Adderall's keep you up.
Here's the thing. Are we sure it's crystal meth? Because similar to the SATs, I ended up Googling like speed, meth, what is the difference between these? And they're talking a lot about speed, which is amphetamines, yep. But meth is methamphetamines, which and then I was on the fucking drugs Reddit reading about different classifications in fucking Australia and whatever. And I was like, we're supposed to do a show right now. I can't be studying this right now. So I'm not totally sure how hard it is. But yeah, it's way obviously harder than Ritalin or whatever.
Yes. Yeah. And I guess the differentiator is that what's her face?
Hunter?
Yes. Hunter's the one that says crystal when she's on the phone.
Right.
She's like, we're looking to score some crystal. But then Chris says speed. So maybe he doesn't get her quite that crystal meth, but he gets her just some speed. But hey.
Yeah. And that's powder, which is kind of more similar to Ritalin and that stuff, as far as I understood it.
Gotcha. And I do like that moment because it kind of comes up twice in this episode. We'll get to the later one when we get towards the end. But just that moment of like, you know, Tony and Carmilla are in the room kind of having a discussion about what they're discussing and the music's loud. Mm-hmm. While they're studying, but you don't know as a parent that you're technically walking in on they're trying to find drugs, like hard drugs. Like yeah. There's that whole, you know, secret life of your child that you don't know about. Even someone like Meadow, who is seemingly a good kid who gets good grades.
Yes. And in that scene as well, he thumps at the wall, but I mean, very noticeably, he's hitting a painting when he's doing that. Because I even noticed the huge fucking painting they have over the bed before that. And I was like, huh, paintings in this episode, right? But then he's even annoyed by the sound, so he's hitting the painting, which is obviously intentional and really nice. Because I was even looking at that painting like, what the hell is that? Because it's like three ladies dancing or something. And I was like, is there a decaying tree somewhere? Am I not getting everything? But yeah. There's this scene we skipped over where we meet Artie. That's his name, right? His restaurant buddy.
Artie Bucco.
Who has a new house closer to the Sopranos. And we find out that Carm and his wife have a bit of a history. And Carm wants them to get closer again. And Tony finds out that they're doing an arson investigation on that little incident from a couple of episodes ago. And I don't think that, I mean, obviously, Artie doesn't know that Tony did this, but the words he uses, it's almost like he's needling him when we're on in a close-up on Tony, and he's like, who would possibly do that? Insanity! A small business owner, and Tony's just being tortured by it, kind of.
Yes.
He's a bit conflicted at this point.
Yeah, and he's just, and from what we know of Tony, he's just kind of annoyed. Like, he has all this, like, emotion, this guilt, and because he, you know, considers Artie a good friend, and he had to torch his restaurant to kind of, in his way, save the business. But then it just becomes annoyance to Tony, where just kind of like, shut the fuck up about your restaurant. Well, I guess that's later, but it just builds into more anger and frustration for Tony to have to kind of keep hearing this story about a thing he did. So he should feel that way. But of course, Tony doesn't like that. And I love Carmella, because Carmella is that passive aggressive, like, piece of shit as well. Even though, like, with Tony, we know she deals with a lot as far as their marriage and, you know, trust and Tony cheating on her. But she loves that she's rich and has a big house and can have these dinners and have a maid and all that stuff. I love the way this whole storyline plays out with, like, kind of the more subtle piece of shitness of Carmella Soprano.
Yeah, and that's interesting, because while that's obviously true, I've, like, honed in a bit more on Artie's wife and what was going on in her head, and I was thinking more about, like, how she came to the decisions she made, because while Carmella is, yeah, a snob, kind of, and she likes saying, oh, she's from Poland, she's usually so good about her maid and stuff, while she does that, I don't think it necessarily warranted what Artie's yeah. wife did in return. So
I agree with that. Yeah.
So it's interesting. But so moving forward, we can get into that, because the next scene that we haven't gotten to yet is where they're having that meeting they're talking, the two wives, and what is her name?
Charmaine.
Charmaine and Carmella. That's- And she has a nickname that's something like Manny or something.
Yeah, I think Carmella calls her Manny.
Yeah, so they're talking, and this scene is mostly to show us the little hand wave, I think, because it's cut like a fucking Western. It cuts so fast on that little wave, and close-ups to that that's how she acts with people, and of course it comes back again later. That's basically the whole point of that little scene. And obviously they're doing the catering, we've established at this point.
I mean, and that's a good call out by you to talk about, like, a Western, because as Junior said at the beginning of this episode, like, hey, we're not making a Western here, but are they? But not the Western you think of. Exactly. But even before that, because we have the scene first, like we're just talking about when they're in the house and Carmella's making those, like, cozy, like, comments, like, oh, I love the coziness, and you know, there's clearly problems because they just moved in and Artie's going to deal with the water or the gutters or whatever it is. But then when it goes to the scene when they're in the bedroom talking before Meadow starts blasting music, Carmella's saying how she had to struggle to find compliments and how she wants to hire them to do the catering. But it's kind of, she's saying it in a weird, like, pity type way, even though, I mean, it still would make sense because they clearly are great cooks. Like, they had a great restaurant that they like to go to, so it does make sense for the catering. But yeah, it all ties in and builds up to this other scene where finally she's got her in the house and she's, you know, talking about how great it's going to be to raise money for this dinner. And then she sees a few fingerprints on, like, the display case, and she's like, I want this room to sparkle.
Yeah.
And yeah, we get the famous little, like, come hither, my minion, and wipe these fingerprints off the glass.
Yeah, and the hand isn't so bad, but it's the face behind it as well, with this sort of, why aren't you already here? Come here, I will tell you what to do. So the kids go off to Christopher & Co. to score some drugs, and Christopher doesn't want to get shot in the head, so he doesn't want to do that. And it's kind of funny, because Hunter asks for a beer, and a girl who I assume is Christopher's girlfriend is like, no. But then they want Crystal, and Christopher's girlfriend is like, well, they're going to get it from someone. Yeah. I'm like, oh, okay, I guess.
Yeah, they're going to go down to, like, basically the black neighborhood where, don't go down there, they're going to rob you and rape you and leave you in a ditch. Mm-hmm. And yes, that's Christopher's girlfriend's Adriana. And there is always the go-to trivia on her character is that she is in the pilot as the hostess at the restaurant when like they're Melfi's waiting like for a table.
Okay.
Tony comes in and gets them a table. And the whole trivia behind it is that she was just cast as this background extra, but then David Chase liked her and kind of built this character as Christopher's girlfriend. And I do love the at the beginning of this scene when Meadow and Hunter knock on the door and Chris is like, go get the door. And she and Adriana makes a comment like, I'm the only one that works around here. And then Christopher goes, yeah, restaurant hostess, real hard work. And it's like, it probably is harder work than what he does. Like, he just sits around and like occasionally deals drugs and then robs trucks. So I just love that it's such a dismissive asshole line, but she is doing a real job. For those one of my favorite moments.
That's true. This gets us to the private party at the hospital where there's a nurse coming in who's doing some arranging and stuff, but then her tits come out. It's a recurring thing in this show. And this is like not denial. This is like, this is Tony getting something nice for him and like Tony connecting to Jackie and us seeing them having a connection and having fun and everything. But also like he gets to take that with him to talk to Melfi about all the positive stuff. But then the negative stuff is coming up from underneath as well. It's like the outside of the tree isn't damaged, but the inside is rotting away, something like that.
Absolutely. And the thing I always wonder about this is because, you know, we see what happens and it's like he brings some stripper who's basically a hooker now because like she's just getting paid to have sex with a cancer man at the hospital. I always wonder because then it just cuts to Tony telling the story. Like, did he tell that exact story? Because we know sometimes he'll say something different, but it cuts in and he's like, I joined him later. We got some booze. It was a great time. And then she just says, I'm glad you can have a party with your friend. So is she really glad that he hired a hooker for his friend, do you think?
Or I mean, that's a good question. I hadn't really thought about it, but I mean, that was a bit of a surprise that he was saying that. But when he did, I assumed then that he said it, but maybe he didn't mention that his friend was married and that makes it fine. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I know it's like a weird nitpick, but I always wonder, like, what did he tell her? Did he tell her that exact story or did he break it down a bit different? But yeah, you're right. Like, is this where she does get him to, it gets into the painting comes up again and he does get to anger. Like, he starts out with this kind of happy story, but then he asks her it's such a dumb thing to do because he's like, you're a doctor, what do you have to say about Jackie? And it's like, clearly, how would she, first of all, she's not a medical doctor, and second of all, without like looking at charts and knowing his medical history and all that, what is she gonna say?
Yeah, and she asks the most reasonable questions of like, well, I need to know more about his condition. And he tells her stuff where we as also fellow non-medical doctors can hear that that doesn't sound good because he had a tumor in his intestines and they took it out, but now there's another one and they can't take it out because it's close to something important. That's not a good look. But he gets upset because they're getting closer to his true feelings, which I think is true. He feels manipulated by the painting and by Melfi in general, and he kind of storms out, and that I guess we need to make a tally, and I'm not 100%, but I guess it's 4. He stormed out 4 times, I think. I'm not 100%. Could be 3, but I'm sure. I wonder if we're going to end up with 1 per episode or if it's going to go above that on the final tally.
Yeah, we might be at... Yeah, I think we're at 3. There's been at least 1 an episode.
Yeah.
But then there's good.
I had a feeling there was 2 in the first one, but I'm not. We can look that up later and we'll have an official scoreboard. We'll put it next to our talking heads. It'll be a reason to join the interactive chat on our YouTube channel, youtube.com/showswhatyouknow, and all of that.
Well, and yeah, you're right, because he kind of starts to tell the story and then she makes a comment like, oh, but they're still keeping him in the hospital. And it's like, that's clearly bad news. And yeah, that's when he just starts to react more and more. It starts to build. yeah, his true feelings, like that he's just all he's thinking about how his friend is going to die, but then by, you know, proxy, he's going to die, you know? And that's why he's seeing death in these paintings and, yeah, seeing the manipulation from Melfi, who's just, you know, asking questions and trying to help him.
Yeah, and this is where he says about the full head of hair, beautiful head of hair, and she brings up the painting because she's like, there's nothing in the painting that indicated that the tree is rotten from the inside. And he's like, I knew that was a fucking scam, like, because he he doesn't want to... Like, she tries to make him remember about the dream and the ducks and how things can mean other things. And I think this is... I'm jumping ahead now, but I think this is why the scene with his mistress is put in and why it fills a great function, because later he's with his mistress and there's a painting there too, and he just gets stuck staring at it, and he asks, you know, what do you see in that painting? Because I think... he was still convincing himself that, now that's some sort of special psychological painting, but then if he just sees death and decay and his own, like, mortality everywhere, then, like, Melfi didn't come in and hang that painting in his Russian, what's it, Gulag?
Yeah, Guma.
Yeah. She didn't hang that, so that's, I think, part of him starting to realize it's more on him.
Yes, yeah, and when he sees that painting, he focuses in on, like, the dark, like, windows and door of, like, the pool house. It's just, like, a pool with, like, a splash, but he's focusing on, like, the dark, like, basically death side of it. And, yeah, you're right. I think it really hammers home that it's not this, you know, therapist scam, because to him, that's what they're trying to do. They're just trying to trick him to keep him coming back. He's seeing it everywhere, even in his regular life. If we could backtrack real quick, it's just a small moment that we kind of skipped over when Paulie and Silvio go and rough up the Hasid, what's his name, Ariel?
Yes.
And he's like, you're getting nothing. And he's banging, like he's going to hit him with, oh no, it's before he hits him with the bell, because then Silvio goes, say bupkis, say bupkis, Paulie. He's like, what? It means nothing. And he's like, here's my nothing. And he hits him with the bell. But I just love that he's telling him to just say bupkis. Like, that's a great way to, you know, really put the exclamation point on how serious they are.
Yes, that is a great scene. I mean, in general, I just love all, like, that's why what I meant about their side quest. It's kind of like the comic relief of them going on, like, a almost buddy cop thing of them solving problems and being upset at coffee shops and stuff like that. So I'm really liking it. And I especially like, obviously, how they have a respect for this guy. They're like, this fucking guy's a bull, and like messing it up. And he's like kind of small and scrawny and they can easily beat him up. But it's like, well, we just beat him until our hands hurt and we don't know what to do anymore.
Yeah, they're like, yeah, if we don't kill this guy, we need to like put him on the payroll or whatever, because he's like such a tough son of a bitch.
Yeah, I love that. I wonder if they will. I feel like they won't, but it would be. I know you can't comment, but it would be interesting if he's in like season 2, episode 3. Remember me? I need cash. So we have a scene where Artie and his wife are arguing about if it's okay to work for The Sopranos, where Artie mentions that Soprano offered to front the money needed to start another restaurant. And she's upset about that. Like, you can never do that. But he calls her a hypocrite because, well, it's okay for us to go and clean their fucking bathroom. And she says, no, this is a proper working gig. We're making food. It's a real job. But I get the feeling that his wife is the sort of person who's very willful and like argumentative and will stand by what she's said. But maybe the things people say can burrow into her mind, because I think it's this conversation as much as Carmilla's little wave that makes her do what she does later, because he actually has some point in that, I think, in saying that, well, you're like, is it so much better? You're just on a lower level doing deals with them. And you're just being, yeah, their servant instead of their partner. How is that better?
Yeah, and it does show, like, what from what we see with Charmaine, like, it does seem initially that, like her intentions are pure, and she is like, what she's saying does make sense. It does make sense. It's a little different, but you are entering a gray area by even working for them. Like, if you want to take this hallowed stance, but she does have a point. Well, you know, hey, it's a paying gig. It's catering. It's for a charity. But from what we see with her reactions, there's definitely, like some, what's it called? I'm spacing on the word now. Like she definitely wants what they have. Like she's there's jealousy to, what Carmilla has as far as the nice house and the servants and all that. Even though she acts like that's not there, it's clearly there. And that's kind of what we see come through.
That's interesting. Yeah, so then we have the fundraiser where she does get the wave, and she's like, I can't believe I just got the wave. Gets it twice, gives a little smile and goes over there. And, I mean, that's what we see of her during the fundraiser, basically. We see Tony and Artie have a food fight in the kitchen, which is great, because they're doing a really good job depicting this friendship. Because when Tony freaked out on him and was like, you fucking depressed asshole, stop talking about your restaurant, and that was... I was like, no, you're one friend, your one true friend. And then the food fight happened, and it was such a relief. I was like, aw, that's so cute. Because it would feel awful if he drove him away, especially considering that he's the one who fucking did that. I mean, that's why he reacts so strongly, as well as all his frustration. We know he displaces his anger, so his frustration with death and everything just kind of bubbles up in that moment. It's really well... composed how they have his different frustrations run through and come together at different points, because this was a couple of episodes ago, but as you said, he's already annoyed with it earlier and guilty, and we've seen his guilt with his mother, and we've seen his worry now about death, and we've seen how he moves his anger from one thing to another. So he just yells at him, and I was like, no, and I was worried, and then there's a food fight, and that was great.
Well, and is there even worry for a moment when Artie says, what the fuck do you know about it, and throws food in his face? Is there a thought of like, uh-oh, like, don't cross Tony Soprano?
I'll be honest. I paused it when Tony was saying his shit, and I had to do something else because I was like, oh, no, they're going to ruin the friendship. So then when he threw the food, it was such a short moment in comparison, so I didn't have time to worry about that.
Yeah, well, and what's interesting is because... yeah, they have this food fight, and it kind of shows like there's still like the obviously friendship and love there. And then we see Carmilla like watching it, and she has a smile. But then out of focus, Charmaine is watching Carmilla watch it as well.
Yeah,
which is kind of a nice little detail. As you know, we build to her confession to Carmilla later in the episode.
Yes, and I like that too, because usually you'd rack that focus, you'd like and you'd play a dramatic sting, oh, this person's watching this person, but we get that, and her being out of focus actually adds to it as well.
Absolutely.
But as far as Tony and Artie, at this point I'm like, nothing's gonna tear them apart, and of course I know you can't comment, but like, this just means it's building. This just means he's being even more of an asshole by like having done this and ruined everything and not confessing at any point and stuff like that. So obviously I don't think this friendship will last, unfortunately, but in this moment, they're doing a good job with it, is what I'm saying. So he gets a call when he's at his Russian mistress though, cause he's got to go and help out. And, he comes in there and calls his friend, his Jewish friend, who gives the advice to finish his bris, which I liked.
Yeah, and I love that moment beforehand where Ariel mentions the siege of Masada, and he talks about the 900 Jews up against the Romans, and he's like, you know, where are the Romans now? And then he's like, you're fucking looking at them, like,
yeah,
because it's already clear, like, when he's saying it, like, that it's this, like, it's a mirror of what's happening. But I just love that quick moment. And it is kind of funny, because you'd almost think like the obvious thing would be, all right, let's crush his dick or cut his dick off. But he has to talk to Hesh. And when Hesh tells him the plan, he's like, that's fucking brilliant. Like, Like, he's kind of bummed that he didn't come up with it. He's like, fucking brilliant.
That's true. It's not like, I mean, they never tried that before. That was, they invented that then? Okay. I mean, they're pretty like down to earth. They're pretty like, you know, if something works, you don't need to fix it. Usually we just rough them up or kill them.
But then, yeah, then it comes out that the father just decides to split the difference and go like pure economics, because, and you're right, to your point of how when he first comes to them at Satriali's, he's making it seem like his concern is that his daughter is getting abused by this man. But now he's like, Ariel wanted 50%. You guys wanted 25%. I just offered him 15. So it's like it works out great for him, because now he doesn't have to give up as much at all and he can get everything situated. But of course, that's not going to fly well with the Soprano crew.
Yeah, and I'm not sure what this guy's thinking here, because Tony's not being unreasonable at all when he says, like, no, we're not doing that. And, like, he's calling him a living golem, a Frankenstein. Is like, we had a deal. Do I seem like the type of person who likes to change a deal so it's worse for me? That's the opposite of how we do things. So, yeah, I mean, he just says, you know, no, you can take that 15% out of your half, because out of your cut, because we own fucking 25 now. So, and he says when he's coming in for the last time to Jackie that we're in the motel business. I cannot imagine that, like, what I mean when I say I don't know what this guy's thinking is that I can't imagine that the next episode is like, the Jewish mafia is here to fucking fuck you over, Tony. Like, that's not going to be the thing. He's like acting like he's got this big, like, support behind him. And if they manifested that, I'd be very surprised. That would be weird. But, I mean, in a way that could work, but he had to go to Tony for help with this. So I don't know. I don't know what he's thinking.
And in a weird way, it's a nice tie to Charmaine and Artie, because it does kind of prove a little bit of what Charmaine's talking about. Like, Tony may come to Artie as a friend, and even in Tony's mind, he could probably think like, no, this is a different situation. This is a buddy of mine from growing up, and I feel bad about what I had to do, so I'm going to give him some startup cash for a new restaurant. But you know, down the line, that's going to be a payback thing for Tony, no matter what. No matter what, even if his intentions are now pure, I think that would change, and you can't really get in the business, or you have to at least know what you're doing if you want to get into business with Tony Soprano.
Yeah, and it's, I mean, the same as the cruise tickets, that there would be something attached later on. And it's interesting that all this started because Junior wanted to do something that would get him involved in like mob stuff, and the whole motivation for setting fire to his place was, I don't want him involved in any of this. But now, like, well, you know, it's fine if he's involved with me, I'm not a bad guy. So yes, we have Carmilla and Mani hanging out, and it does, like, in this scene at least, Carmilla is actually trying to be nice and talking about how everyone complimented the food and it went so great and everything. And Mani is, like, not acting like normal. And Carmilla notices and asks what's wrong. And Mani, pretty out of the blue, decides to tell her about her and Tony years and years ago. She's like, I never wanted to tell you this. But hey, I feel I better let you know that I fucked your husband once. And it feels pretty uncalled for. But that's her saying, like, hey, I could have been where you are, but I chose not to. And I'm glad I'm not. How about you? And I don't know how much of that is her telling herself, and how much of that is to put more distance between them and the Sopranos in general, or to maybe it's partially because of the money offer as well, because she knows Artie might accept that money, but she doesn't want that. She wants more distance between them, or is it just for her own personal frustration? What do you think?
I think it's got to be all of the above, but it definitely, I think, mostly is this weird revenge kind of like knife twist. Because, like, it's weird because I get it. Like, I guess I'm kind of, I don't want to say vindictive, but I don't like to feel that way, because you know the way she felt in that moment when she was just, she wasn't a friend anymore. She was an employee.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, to Carmilla's credit, I mean, she was an employee. She was working the party. But yeah, still, it was like that weird loss of respect, that weird, like, you're on a lower tier than me. And, you know, come here and do my bidding. But yeah, it's mostly, to me, comes off as for sure just this revenge, twist the knife, and probably she isn't as happy with her choice. And there's, or she probably is, but there's, with everyone, there's that small piece of that's kind of like, oh, what if, like, that could have been this could have all been mine, you know?
Yeah, and I think also because she really like emphasizes that we don't want to have any dealings with these illegal things, but she was like, so she convinces herself that if I could have had, why would I agree to have just a small dealing with these illegal things when I could have had all of this? Like, why would I agree to get some money for the restaurant and get involved with shady business? I didn't want to get involved in shady business. If I wanted that, I would have had all of it. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's part of it.
Yeah. Yeah, I do like it's, that's why it's such a, I mean, the nice moment in the show, and just like a kind of preview of the show in general, because even something as what would seemingly be more of a basic storyline has a lot of layers going on and a lot to kind of like unpack. And yeah, you can kind of come out either way. Like, I still do think Carmilla wouldn't admit how snobby and kind of like holier than thou she is, but then Charmaine is also not as this like pinnacle of, you know, like trust and purity, you know what I mean? So yeah, there's obviously a lot of layers there, and it is such a kind of like a shitty response to just be like, yeah, well, I had sex with your husband and, you know, maybe I probably could have kept him and I could have had your life, but I didn't want it. So yeah, like, you, we're not going to be, you know, all this talk about maybe we should be closer now. We're clearly not going to be close friends.
Yeah. And it's interesting because this is also one of those details where it was only in this episode that I started to get how well they knew each other. I mean, the two families in general, I knew he was Tony's friend from school, but that Carmilla and her knew each other and everything, that they all go way back. That's interesting. That's almost like finding out that there's a mob boss with cancer, and I feel like, you know, then maybe in the future we'll see more of this. Because, for example, I don't think that Charmaine and Tony have had a scene together, right?
Yeah, I don't think so.
Because she says that, it is a revelation to me as well, because they've not had a scene together. Every scene, she's just talking about what a fucking piece of shit he is, and you can't be doing any deals with him. But then I wonder what their actual dynamic is at present, like, because it's all about, like, she brings it up as a weapon to stab Carmilla with. But what do they really feel? Like you said, there's a lot of layers, and it's an interesting. It's an interesting choice for her to do that instead of just say something else shitty, you know, because this actually expands upon it. It doesn't close the chapter of what's going on. It sort of expands and opens up new stuff for the future. Because in the end, it the only effect is Tony arrives and Carmilla like won't take his hand at the recital. But as we saw in the previous episode of the truck, the truck isn't gone. It's at the start of the next episode and being returned. And guess what? Someone's going to fucking die from it. We didn't even get into that yet, but yeah.
Yeah. And even when we do see like a scene with Tony and Charmaine in the future, even if it's just a quick, you know, exchange of pleasantries, now we know like what the history is there and, you know, what the connection, like the underlying connection between them. So yeah, it adds a lot of layers to the show and kind of where we're going. And before we get to the recital, we cut back quick a little bit to when Tony does see Jackie again towards the end, and now Jackie looks horrible, and it does even look like maybe he's losing a bit of his hair and he's really concerned with his temperature. and he's kind of not paying attention. Like, Tony's trying to tell the hilarious story of how they were going to cut the Jewish guy's dick off. And he's like, I'm trying to get his pants off. You know, Silvio's got the clippers. He's sitting there praying, rocking back and forth. And like you said, he comes in talking about, oh, we're in the hotel business. And he goes into this hilarious story. And then he's kind of bummed that Jackie isn't, you know, yucking it up with him. He's just really honed in on his temperature. It's like 102 point something. And he's like taking his pulse and he looks bad. And we're seeing this, we're seeing the rotting tree like before our eyes here.
Yeah. And this is another one of those things. I don't know if that's warm or cold. What is that, Jim? Is that good? Because
we're Fahrenheit. Yeah. I think, like, 98.6 is basically, for Fahrenheit, that's human temperature.
Okay. So yeah, it's a bit hot.
Anything over 100 or, like, they, like in movies a lot, they'll be like, he's got a temperature of 103. It's always like, let's get to the fucking hospital. This is bad news.
Okay, cool. And usually we'd go from that scene to therapy, because usually we have something happen and then, like, cut to therapy. But there's a little scene snuck in between that we did touch on, where Uncle Junior's putting up a picture on Olivia's wall. That's her name.
Yeah,
I'm still getting my bearings here.
He's in Green Grove now, and Uncle June's helping her decorate. And I think they're putting up a picture of AJ. I think this is his only appearance in this episode, Anthony Jr.
Yeah, and he kind of checks in on what she's thinking, and like this kid, and she kind of, it's interesting how they say stuff without saying stuff, of like, he's like a son to him and to me, and he's like, okay, and like, they're not just saying that they're a son to him, it's saying like, when she's saying he put up storm drains for me, it's like, okay.
I love that line where it's like, I won't have that talk. He put up my, I like Maltasanti. He put up my storm windows one year. It kind of calls back a little bit to Junior's line at the beginning of the episode when he's like, I bought that kid a $400 surfboard or whatever.
Yeah. Whatever he
says. And this is the most direct we've seen. And maybe even the most direct we do see of Olivia being kind of like, throwing her weight around a bit, because she has this the moment where she likes Christopher because he put up her storm windows and he's a nice boy, but this Brendan Filoni, I don't know him. And then Junior kind of has like a little smile, like, and he I think he has a comment about how like she's a smart old broad or something like that, and then she's like, I'm a babbling idiot, that's when my son put me in a nursing home.
But she knows what he's talking about. And I wonder, like, why he's doing this. Because does he want to check out what she'd be okay with? And if that's the case, like, he wants her as an ally, obviously. But is it for actual advice? Or is it just to keep them on the same level? Like, what power does she actually have? Or is it just because they're brother and sister? Or is it that he wants inside info? Why is he doing this? I'm not 100%. I mean, the most obvious reason for me is family. Like, you would check before you do that, right? I don't know. What do you, obviously, you've seen more Sopranos, but where are you at?
I mean, I think keeping it in what we've seen with these three episodes, it does kind of come down to, and it's like the tagline of the show. And it sounds like such a goof and it sounds like such a dumb tagline, but it works, where it's like, if this family won't kill him, the other one will. And it does kind of show how tied together this mob family / like actual family is, and the politics that kind of come through with that. And it connects with that scene, I believe it's in the pilot, when Uncle Junior's driving Olivia. It makes more sense in the scene in the pilot because he's kind of almost talking about knocking Tony off, and he wants to get Olivia's approval when they're in the car.
Yeah.
Like, my friends from New York say things like, maybe something should be done. And he kind of gives her a look. And I think it ties into all those things. And maybe even since she was married to his brother, there's that respect there as well, where it's like, it's still Olivia Soprano, the wife of my brother, who was like, you know, from what we know, he was a high end guy in the mob until he passed away, even though he was a saint, of course. Mm-hmm. But we're just starting to see more of like Junior's respect for Olivia and why that is. I do think it's not fully clear, but from what we can glean, it's just like family slash, you know, quote, family.
Yeah. And I'll say, you know, Olivia can be a drag. Like in the previous episode, she was causing our boy Tony a lot of troubles and a lot of worries. But her feelings exactly mirror mine here of like, this Christopher, he's a good kid at heart, the viewer says. This Brendan guy, I don't know him. He was just some idiot. He's talking shit all the time and he does meth. If something happened, would anyone cry? Not me. I don't know.
Not only that, he hits on high school girls. Because we kind of glossed over that. Like, he keeps winking at Hunter and like giving kissy faces and like call me and all this shit.
Yeah.
And he's very quick to like, you got money? Like, as soon as she brings up, like, earlier in the episode when she brings up they're there to cop. And then Christopher's like, don't give her anything. But he's just like, you got money? It's another sale for him.
Yes. Although Christopher does end up giving speed to Meadow, which we kind of sped past there. But that's also why, you know, we're coming up on the ending montage when he thinks he's getting killed by Tony and his goons. His Russian goons. I don't know why he would have Russian goons. But...
Well, that's what Christopher says. He says, you're friends with Tony's guma. That's what he thinks the connection is.
Okay.
And we do see that he has a Russian guma in that earlier scene. So it works with that as well. So he thinks that that's how he sent them.
A Russian guma that was incidentally recast between the pilot and now. Because I was like, is that a different guma or is it the same? And I kind of checked it out. And it's the same character, but a different actress. Although she was kind of, I don't know if she was shown very close. No, yeah, she was in the restaurant shown close up in the pilot. But anyway, this brings us to the final therapy session where we get the quote from the intro, where Tony says he wouldn't mind dying for a cause in a war, but withering away like Jackie, like something you couldn't fight. And I mean, I also wrote down the quote. I didn't know you'd selected it, but like, all this shit's for nothing. Mm-hmm. If it's for nothing, why do I gotta think about it? And it's this thing of knowing you're gonna die. And she asks him, do you feel like a Frankenstein? Do you feel like a thing, a golem? As he's been accused, just... from which I take, you know, going through the motions but not feeling connected to what you're doing, just being an object waiting to die.
And we don't get an answer. It just kind of goes to the next scene, which I mean, which is good. I mean, we don't really need an answer, but it's also, I just admire the like, I mean, we all have these thoughts and we all struggle with this. I just admire that it's episode 3 and they're kind of posing these questions. And it is nice, like we kind of talked about at the top, that you have these therapy scenes where you can kind of go off book a little bit and just have a quick conversation that ties in with some of the themes of the show. But I just love that they're already there. Like, we're already getting there, like kind of discussing mortality and like the meaning of life. And, you know, in a way, from the outsider's point of view, I mean, Tony is a monster. He's, you know, yes, he's right in his bargaining with this guy, like where the guy offered him 25% of his hotel, but he's wrong because he's, you know, robbing this man of his business because of a weird situation. So,
yeah. Yeah. And it's a great cut to the choir recital as well, because I think, in that moment, he feels like, yes, I am. And then he sees his daughter singing. Yep. And that's like a religious moment for him. And then we also intercut that with Christopher getting threatened. And Brendan, I finally learned his name just in time for him to get shot. Execution style, our death counter will be right next to our storming out of the office counter, and they will be going head to head against each other. I think we're just at 2 deaths, right? I mean, there was one guy killed in... No, sorry, 3 deaths. One guy in the pilot that Christopher offed, then the truck driver and this guy. Yep. So they're neck and neck.
We really have to get a counter, by the way. What I do love about this, though, too, because, yeah, I agree that Tony... when he sees his daughter in the recital, he is getting a better outlook on life, and he is starting to think he's more than a monster. But I love that we, the audience, know that she's high as fuck on stage. Yeah. So it adds like that other layer to it. Like, it's kind of phony in a weird way.
Yeah.
And yeah, and we, this montage is, it's like such mafia movie, like 101, but it's still done really well. Like, it's like something you'd see in The Godfather, even Goodfellas, where it's intercut with, yeah, we see Christopher. Like, this is the second like ice cream truck we've seen them go to. Maybe we get the ice cream truck counter, because
I guess maybe it was the same one.
Oh yeah, probably, because he even says he's like, I do blah 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 for me.
Yeah,
and yeah, he gets dragged to the docks, and you know, he's beaten and ready to die, and he thinks it's because he gave Meadow drugs, and it's like insinuated that he shits himself because they're like, ugh, pu.
Oh, I didn't catch that.
And then Brendan, yeah, wakes up in the tub when Mikey's there, and shoots him like right in the face. And then there we go. Junior's waiting outside, like right outside the door to watch him get killed.
He's literally there just to enjoy it, I guess.
Yeah, like you didn't need to be there.
Yeah. And what does he say? He says, hi, Jackie, bye, Jackie?
He says, hi, Jack, bye, Jack. I don't know if that's a reference, because his name's Brendan.
Yeah. Yeah, I wasn't sure. I was just, in case you knew what that meant.
Oh, well, L.A. Confidential. Is he referencing L.A. Confidential?
Well, I just find references to this episode of The Sopranos. Oh, shit. in some of, like, because in my subtitles, I watch it with subtitles, it says, hi, Jack, bye, Jack, but someone wrote it as hijack, like hijack a truck. Hijack by Jack. It's like, but my name's Brendan. Think on that. You can't. You're dead now.
I'm seeing something about LA Confidential, but I don't know if that's a quote or what.
Okay.
Probably not.
You know, we will dig this up for next episode, I'm sure. And we should have
did it beforehand, but hey, what are you gonna do?
There's a whole like discussion on a Swedish forum is one of the ones that popped up. Why did he say Jack? And then like I'm on a forum thread from 2013. I never understood why he said Jack, and like a whole conversation on it. And someone says maybe the driver of the truck was named Jack, not sure. And then it's like, it's a wordplay on the word hijack. Hijack by Jack, and Jack could be a name you call someone like Buddy.
That is it, isn't it? It is fucking hi. So those subtitles were kind of right, because maybe he is saying hijack. All right, yeah, whatever. That's what he. I don't know.
But my subs were not like, if it said hijack as one word, I would have got it. But it's two words. Hey, you know, this is the most fascinating part of The Sopranos, and there's so many questions, so many possibilities, so many interpretations. That guy's basically like an idiot as far as what I've gotten from this character. The guy who's his backup, who I forgot his name again.
Oh, Brendan, yeah.
No, the other guy.
Oh, Mikey.
Mikey's not going to have good lines, and I bet he thought of that way in advance. And I assume after they went outside, Junior was like, who's Jack? He's like, no, I thought out this thing. It made more sense in my head. So let's not worry more about it.
This is neither here nor there, but then through the credits is a great Elvis Costello song, Complicated Shadows. So shout outs to that. But yeah, I mean, I forgot like how deep this show is even in the beginning, because it gets more into stuff like this as it goes. And I assumed it was kind of the way I remembered it is that the first few seasons were like kind of mafioso heavy. And then it started getting more into like philosophical questions and stuff. But I didn't realize that they were still right there in the beginning. I guess I just picked up on it like originally watching it and whatnot.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm not like I'm a little 3 years old in the Sopranos years right now, so I'll live and learn. But it feels right now like if the Sopranos was a mini series with 12 episodes, I would still get why people talked about it because like there's so much in each of these, and maybe it's because we're going at this pace, and it's actually really fun and interesting to go into these d different details, and it sort of helps you get more out of it. But still, it feels like there's a lot going on already, as you said. And a lot of my favorite shows, I'm like, well, you know, the first season's kind of so-so, and then they get their shit together, and clearly they have their shit together already.
Absolutely. So that's that episode. Careening through these at a weekly pace. We will be discussing episode four next week. Make sure you get on the podcast as well as the YouTube. We broadcast live on Sundays for Sopranos. And we also do have a separate feed, Cut to Black, for the podcast. If you'd be nice enough to subscribe and review, we'd appreciate it.
Yes, just search for Cut to Black on your favorite podcast platform. It should show up. And if not, please do message us. We'll get right on that. It's also still possible for about like 2 days or whatever to leave a review and recommend a show for us to watch that we will then be contractually obligated to do. We set a deadline on that on February 1st. After that, it will still be possible to leave reviews, which we'll very much appreciate. Maybe you'll do what Leon did, who left the latest review, 5 stars. Keep up the good work is the name of the review, and the content of the review is just thanks, XOXO. So I don't, I assume he isn't saying we need to watch Gossip Girl. I assume we don't have to do that. You can just leave a review at any time, really, and we still will very much appreciate it. But you will get added to the list of written in stone. We must do episodes on these episodes if you do it really rather quickly right now. We have a bunch of shows that we're going to get into, like Band of Brothers and The Inbetweeners and a bit more of Fargo and stuff like that. So that's on our main Shows What You Know feed and website, showswhatyouknow.com.
Yes, and you know what else?
What else?